the Institute on Religious Life and the Daughters of St. Mary of Providence of Chicago bring you the following in a series of lectures given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J., on the theme, The History of Religious Life. Father John Hardin is a professor of theology at St. John's University in New York. He is a well-known lecturer and consultant to various national religious and educational enterprises, and is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin is the author of many articles and books, including Holiness in the Church and the Catholic Catechism, which has been strongly endorsed by Holy Mother Church. In this following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, St. Dominic and the Apostolate of Teaching the Word of God. Father Hardin.
Among the items you've received are two in Dominican spirituality. One is an analysis, and the other is a rundown of 10 of the outstanding statements in the Dominican tradition given by St. Thomas Aquinas, who was on the scene early in the Dominican order, and whose writings have influenced the whole church ever since. I would like to first give you a brief rundown on the history of the Dominican order. Compare St. Francis with St. Dominic, then go over the chart with you, which contains material for hours of lecturing, and then look at St. Thomas's teaching, which is perhaps the highest expression of Dominican spirituality that we have. The founder of the Dominicans was Dominic Guzman, at least that's the Spanish pronunciation, spelled G-U-S or G-U-Z, M-A-N-N. Born of noble parents and after a brilliant course of studies, and the word brilliant course is important, became a priest. What brought the Dominicans into existence was what Dominic did shortly after his ordination. He traveled through France and was appalled by the ravages of the Albigensian heresy in the France of the early 13th century. He saw hundreds of cities lost to the church because of the ideas that had been imbibed, often in learned circles, by the people, bishops, priests, religious, and the laity. An estimate is that 1,100 towns in France alone had become Albigensian. The Fourth Lateran Council in 1215, that we've touched on at least one or the other time before, was met mainly to combat this heresy. He was already a priest, and he began preaching in one town after another, teaching the truth and combating the errors that he met, especially among priests and clergy. He felt from the very beginning that this kind of error cannot be conquered by human wisdom alone. He founded an order of women in 1206. The town was Carcassonne, C-A-R-C-A-S-O-N-N-E. In the meantime, he interested other priests to join him, and also men who were not going on for the priesthood, so that by 1215, which is very rapidly, they came to be called friars preachers, both priests and laymen who, as members of the community, were allowed to preach. The actual foundation is dated 1215, the city Toulouse. And remarkably, within 1 year, Pope Honorius III, in the next year, 1216, approved the rule of St. Dominic, based heavily on that of St. Augustine. And soon there were houses in all the major cities of France. Dominic died 5 years after his order was approved, 1221. Would you believe it? By 1221, there were 8 provinces established already in Europe. That's why I keep telling people, even as I say that we're going through the most devastating period of the Church's history today, all kinds of new religious orders are needed, and I happily know they're coming into existence. Not to supplant those that exist, but to take on new work and, frankly, to inspire all of us with what can be done. Watching as I do the missionaries of charity week after week, you can almost touch and feel the grace of God, extraordinary gifts. That community, 25 years old, this year, 365 novices. In any case, something like that took place in the Albigensian times, where there were such awful things going on, and God raised, as he raised Francis, so he raised Dominic, to meet the needs of the times. These are such times today. The Dominicans preached to both ordinary people and simple people. However, by preference, as we shall see in a moment, they concentrated on the more learned, especially the clergy, who some of them, in fact most of them, far as we can tell, were dismally ignorant. And I don't think there's anything worse for the Church than an ignorant priest. He's a dangerous creature. Because as a priest, he'll be respected, and his words, his teaching will be accepted, but he can teach the most awful nonsense and be believed. Before we go on to analyze the Dominican spirituality theologically, I like to make 6 comparisons between Francis and Dominic. When I do these things, I always hope that those whom I'm talking about appreciate what I'm doing. First, both Francis and Dominic wished to go to the people, and in this sense there was a major shift in the history of religious life from the monasticism, which by definition requires that the people go to the monastery. Francis and Dominic reversed that. The monastery goes to the people. But Dominic's spirituality was more structured than that of Francis. Dominic has a great deal of the monastic structure, and to this day the Dominicans retain it. They have the divine office in choir. They have rules and regulations. that pertain especially to the monastic tradition, much more so than St. Francis. Second, both Francis and Dominic recognized the need to fuse the contemplative and the active life, or the life of prayer, with the apostolate. And as by now we all know, one of the hardest relationships to maintain. To both, be totally dedicated to the work for souls and to give one's time to prayer. One reason is last night, for example, to keep myself awake, I walked around in chapel. I want to spend a certain amount of time before the Blessed Sacrament. But after a certain time, the body, I know, makes certain demands. So the Spirit tells the body, all right, you're going to stay awake if I keep you awake. Well, both recognize the difficulty of combining the two. Unlike the monastic tradition, right? Where everything had to subserve the liturgy and prayer. So many hours, so much time in prayer at certain state of times, and nothing. You're in the middle of plowing a field, or you've just, for example, say, got the plow finally behind the horse, and the horse is ready to go, and then the bell rings. It's time for, well, let's make it prime. The horse doesn't know what's coming off. But the monk does. So he leaves the horse and goes to chapel for prime. Are we clear? That's the monastic tradition. There is a primacy and a priority to prayer to which everything else must be subordinated. As we've been saying all along, every community today, one reason why we're having this course, owes something to all of these traditions. All right? No two communities have exactly the same proportion. Some have more structure, some less. Some are more monastic, some less. In any case, between the two, the Franciscans were quite satisfied to, you might say, live out this mixed life in practice. The Dominicans took on the task of studying and analyzing this relationship. You can't imagine the number of books published by the Dominicans, including Thomas Aquinas, on the relationship of the active to the contemplative life. In fact, the very terminology we owe to the Dominicans. Third, both Francis and Dominic desire to communicate the gospel to the people. But where Francis is more immediately concerned with speaking to the heart, Dominic was more directly concerned with enlightening the mind and thus motivating the will to love and serve God. Fourth, both Francis and Dominic were zealous to proclaim the Word of God, but Francis' approach was more pastoral, homiletic, simple, and spontaneous. Whereas Dominic's approach did not exclude, of course, the pastoral and the homiletic, but stressed the intellectual, the academic, the organized, the scholastic, the institutional. All teaching communities in the Catholic Church owe to the Dominicans the foundations which Dominic so well laid. 5th. In a sense, the two forms of proclamation of the gospel were meant to complement one another. In other words, it was no coincidence in God's providence that Dominic and Francis were literally contemporaries. And for a while there was a question of whether they would become one order. That would have been a hard one to name, the Franco-Dominicans. In any case, God provided for the church for now 700 years, and we are confident for centuries to come. On the Franciscan side, the meeting of the universal needs. On the Dominican side, the meeting of particular needs. On the Franciscan side, the ordinary people. They're run of the mill. Even the Greeks had a word for it, the hoi polloi. The Dominicans concentrated on the learned. Or maybe the not so learned, but who needed to be taught. The Franciscans wanted to be sure that everyone had the gospel preached, including the unlettered and the children. The Dominican created schools in order to teach, especially the teachers. And we might say, somebody had better do that. And sixth, finally, eventually, these two spiritualities or forms of proclamation of the gospel became more similar to one another. We now have Dominicans, not many, but engaged in pastoral work. One of my best friends was Father Sullivan, who for 18 years, a Dominican, was chaplain at Ohio State Penitentiary. And the prize exhibit in his room, where he was chaplain to the Immaculate Heart of Mary community in Monroe, Michigan, where I taught summers, the prize exhibit was a belt. I would say it must have been, 6 to 8 feet long, leather strap. Somehow the leather was clamped together, which showed signs of being burnt. It was the belt with which those who were being executed in the electric chair would be tied. Father Sullivan had the privilege of then removing the belt from a burnt body. And he never felt he could destroy, since that belt had witnessed the death of so many people. So Dominicans can be chaplains. And we do have, for example, at St. Bonaventure University, which is Franciscan's. But with such exceptions, the distinction remains. And it reflects, and with this we close this part, it reflects what Christ did. Remember, sometimes just as a bit of spiritual curiosity, you know, meditation can be interesting. Enjoy yourself. Find out where Christ speaks to the hoi polloi and where he speaks to the special, immediate followers and disciples. You know he distinguishes, don't you? He doesn't say the same thing. He would take the disciples aside. He'd tell them things he wouldn't tell the others. He'd explain things to them that he did not explain to the others. is the same Christ, but a Christ who is concerned about both the leaders and the led, about the shepherds and the sheep. All right? So that both spiritualities remain in the church, both are needed, but they are quite different. And lest I forget, a little booklet of 58 pages by St. Vincent Ferrer of the Order of Preachers, Treatise on the Spiritual Life. Somewhat, of course, pertains more to the monastic tradition, but most of these 60-some pages are such profound wisdom that we can all profit from it. Treatise on the Spiritual Life by St. Vincent Ferrer. Don't we have a St. Vincent Ferrer's church in Chicago? Do the Dominicans staff it? Okay. He's one of their great preachers. The one who foretold, among other things, the end of the world unless the people reformed. Then, later on, the problem arose, well, the world still is in existence. Well, at least the part that he preached to did reform. There are certain writings that have deeply influenced my life. These 58 pages have made a big difference in my life. I commend it to all of you. Very practical, down to earth. Let me read some of the chapters, especially for religious. On poverty, on silence, on purity of heart, on the manner of regulating the body, rules to be observed at table, on preaching, remedies against certain spiritual temptations, remedies against false revelations. Is he ever down to earth? How to escape the snares and temptations of the devil. Having said that, let's now look at the outline of Dominican spirituality. First, the importance. Why is Dominican spirituality so important for the church? Well, first, because of St. Thomas, who is the church's greatest teacher. And therefore, Thomistic theology, or the theology of Thomas Aquinas, is the common inheritance of all of us. Secondly, the influence on Catholic education. The Dominicans were the first religious order as such to operate their own schools. Religious had taught in schools, but the formal, explicit, overt establishment of schools outside of what had been previously just monastic grounds, that was done by the Dominicans. And then, of course, the influence on religious life and the intellectual world. Some of the greatest minds in the church, for example, there are three Dominican doctors of the church. Who are they? St. Thomas, St. Albert the Great, St. Robert Bellarmine. He was a Jesuit. St. Catherine of Siena. At any rate, they have deeply influenced the world of ideas. The origins, we've touched on some of this just to fill in some of the empty spaces. It is interesting to note that St. Dominic's mother is Blessed Jane, of Asa, it helps to have a saint for a mother. And Dominic, by the way, Dominic emphasized the importance of sound Catholic education from the beginning. He belonged to what we would call an Augustinian order. Not really. He followed the Augustinian rule before he founded the Dominicans. He was a choir canon, identified with the church, sang the divine office before he became a Dominican. As we said earlier, he was inspired by the prevalence of heresy. He saw widespread ignorance of bishops and priests. And although you may be surprised that I say it, I hope you won't be scandalized, but I think this is one of the main reasons for the convulsion of the Catholic Church. You'd never guess. Ignorance of bishops and priests. Ignorance of their faith. You see, some of the imprimaturs that have been given to books, you see a prayer for the bishop. Couldn't possibly know what's going on. Then papal approval, as we said, in 1216. The foundation of the Dominican order coincided with the Fourth Lateran Council, as 3 centuries later, the origin of the Society of Jesus with Corus of Pond to a great council, the Council of Trent, which meant that Dominic then was given by the Fourth Lateran Council the tools and the weapons, you might say, that he had to use in combating heresy. Among many, the two principal dependencies of Dominic's thinking are on Cassian. We just made references to him. We did not study him. An early monastic, both abbot and writer, and the Desert Fathers. The Desert Fathers, by the way, not curiously but interestingly, particularly appeal to Dominic because so much of the long years of study by the Dominicans was to live the equivalent of a hermit's life. And, by the way, to work in the intellectual apostolate, you must have some hermit's blood in your veins, because study and research is a very lonely job. And finally, he associated in a way that Francis before him, preaching and poverty. Either the people see you as poor or don't preach to them, otherwise they won't listen. The basic premises, we would expect them to be founded somehow on truth. The first basic premise of Dominican spirituality is that truth is the foundation of the spiritual life. Unlike with Francis, what would be the foundation? No, as distinct from truth. Obviously. Look. God, like the rest of us, I mean to be reverent, is a being who has a mind and a will. The only reason anybody has a mind, or what little we have, is because the Creator That's why we know that God must have a mind. Look at the minds he's created. Well, the limitations are all our fault. In any case, God then has a mind and a will. The object of mind is truth. The object of will is love or goodness. So unlike Francis, for whom the foundation of the spiritual life was love, and notice how that seeped into everything he touched. He had love labeled on everything. All kinds of stickers, love this and love that. Even the incarnation, right? It was love. With Dominic, it was rather truth. And then, in terms of the source of truth, is reason and revelation. If truth is the foundation of the spiritual life, where do you get it? One from inside, the other from outside. From inside, from your own reason. From outside, revelation. So that we might define reason as the inside source of truth. And we might define revelation as the outside source of truth. What were the leading sources, or better, what are the leading sources for our understanding, if we want to study or better comprehend what the Dominican spirituality is? We go especially to these six sources. First and most obviously, Dominic's own rule of life. Second, the writings of St. Albert, the teacher of St. Thomas. I am currently working with one of the brightest men I ever taught. He's finishing his theological studies at Emmitsburg, Maryland, one of my former students at the university. We're working on a volume that should be finished by the end of the year, a lifetime program for Catholic reading. We're choosing about the 100 best books in the Catholic faith from the first century to the 20th. You can't imagine what problems we've got in the 20th century to choose and pick. Many people, I'm sure, are going to be disappointed because their favorites won't be listed. But among the men we're listing is St. Albert. And because I was checking it just the other day, he published 38 volumes. Then St. Thomas Aquinas. If any of you are interested, the sale may still be on in New York. McGraw-Hill is offering the Summa Theologica in English, Latin on one side, English on the other, sells normally for about $450. $150, 30% of the cost, McGraw-Hill. Though when I had somebody call up McGraw-Hill, they claimed they didn't know anything about it. Well, I know they've got a sale because they got a letter telling me they've got a sale. At any rate, Thomas Aquinas is just great. And frankly, he's not hard, honest. You've got to get some of his vocabulary, but once you get past some of his vocables, he's not hard to understand, and he's clear. Much clearer, by the way, than most of his commentators. So Thomas Aquinas, especially the Summa Theologica. Then Blessed Henry Suso, one of the great Dominican mystics, the president of Aquinas College in Nashville, Tennessee, that I periodically write to, is sister, Henry Sousa. His books, The Book of Truth, Book of Eternal Wisdom, and The Little Book of Letters, his own collection, are indispensable for understanding the mystical side of Dominican spirituality. Then, of course, St. Catherine of Siena, her dialogues. And then, as already recommended, Vincent Ferrer's little 58-page treatise is a gem. One thing he taught me, if you don't mind my mentioning this, I'm liable to forget, is that if you really want to work on your spiritual life, work on the mind, and watch especially the first risings of any thought of self-complacency. The first thought of self-praise, of self-satisfaction, nip it in the bud. That's why, whenever I think I've told you, I reread what I've published. I make a short examination of conscience. Should I do it? In most cases, the answer is no. It would give me the satisfaction that I have no business looking for. Principle expressed in Latin should be memorized. The Latin sounds good, and besides, it's the original, and we'll have the English equivalent. The purpose of the spiritual life is, these are infinitive of the verb, contemplare et alius, contemplata tradere. What is the purpose of the spiritual life? To contemplate and to pass on to others what you have contemplated. Is that beautiful? The purpose of the spiritual life is to contemplate, of course, God in his wisdom, and to pass on to others what you have contemplated. Evidently, you will pass on to others as much as you yourself have learned. But notice, too, there is that conjunction, et, and. The purpose of the spiritual life is not to contemplate, period. Okay? It is to behold the truth, and notice it's not to discover the truth. It is to behold, to look at. The highest function of the mind is not to reason. Reason is in the order of means. It is to behold, to contemplate, which is in the order of end. The only reason we reason is in order to contemplate. Heaven, thank God, will not be an eternity of reasoning. When you're reasoning, you're still on your way. When you contemplate, you've arrived. And you contemplate what you now see and believe in, then you reason some more, but then the goal of the spiritual life is to behold the truth and share it with others. Now some of the principal features of Dominican spirituality. Each one of these is good for a lecture. We'll do what we can. First, on the relationship of nature and grace. Nature, as you know, is that which with which we come into the world. Nature is the given. Grace is the needed. Nature is that with which we are naughty. Born. Grace is that which we are given. Now, somewhat unlike what would be, for example, true in the monastic tradition. It is not, we cannot possibly say this, that the ancient monks or fathers of the desert believed that nature should be destroyed. No. Nevertheless, their attitude, as we know from, you read, haven't you, the writings of Pachomius, remember, Anthony of the Desert? Well, no, he wasn't going to destroy nature. But do you think we can say that he didn't look upon nature as all that good? He needed to be, well, fasted and frosted into submission. Not so Dominic. Now, of course, you've got to be very selective in whom you take.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.